I will be Sultan, Mehmed growled. When I take the throne, I will be the hand of God on earth. I will fulfill the destiny laid out by Muhammad, the prophet. Peace be upon him, and you will know that he was right. He slumped, the fire gone out of his voice. But I need more time. I want to do more than merely occupy the throne. I want to command it.
How can they expect you to lead? Radu asked.
He hurried on, afraid of insulting Mehmed. You will be a great leader. This is right, the hand of God in giving you the throne. As soon as Radu said it, he knew it was true. He had seen what Mehmed was, what he could become. Mehmed was smart and true, clever and strong. When they prayed together, Radu felt it more deeply than when he prayed alone, as though Mehmed's very soul was stronger than everyone's around him. Lara tapped her chin.
I think we can help.
Your father is abdicating because of the peace with Hunyadi, yes? Mehmed nodded, frowning curiously. Radu flopped back. He put his hands over his face and groaned. He knew his sister too well. No help from her would be a good thing.
Very well, Sultan Mehmed. We go to claim your throne.
Lara's face twisted into a smile that a wolf would envy.
And, since your father only felt safe enough to abdicate because of peace, when we get there, we start a war.
19. John Hunyadi, Vivode of Transylvania. I am writing on behalf of our shared interest in defeating the infidel Turks and protecting the Christian sanctity of Transylvania, Wallachia, and Constantinople itself. You will know me as the daughter of Vlad Dracul, Vivode of Wallachia. These past years, I have been held in the Ottoman courts as ransom to secure my father's loyalty. During my time here, I have become privy to many secrets. I desire the overthrow of the plague of Islam upon the earth, and you can help achieve it. Murad has this very day given up the sultanate, handing the throne to his young son, Mehmed. Mehmed is impetuous and untried, a zealot fixated on taking Constantinople. He has neither the respect of his soldiers nor control of his people. Strike now. Strike hard. Secure our borders. Push the infidels back. Squeeze their filth from the lands of all Christendom. I will do what I can to foment dissension and rebellion within Mehmed's own borders. I trust you to be an Athleta Christi beyond them. Rally the forces for a crusade such as the world has never seen. I look forward to the day when I am released from this den of vipers and can join you in protecting Wallachia, Transylvania, and blessed Constantinople. Ladislav Dragula, daughter of the dragon. Lada slammed her knee into Nikolai's stomach, narrowly missing his groin. His deflection threw him off balance. She pressed her advantage, hitting him with her wooden practice sword until he dropped his own sword and stumbled back. To keep the fight challenging, she threw her sword down as well. She hated being back in Adena, hated the way it made her feel caged, hated even more that she had briefly imagined she was free in Amasya. Freedom in these lands was a lie, a glittering fantasy to lull her into sleepiness, into acceptance, into forgetfulness. She was not free here and never would be. She had not seen Halima or Mara and did not know if they were even still in the capital, or if Murad had taken his wives with him. She hoped for Halima's sake that he had, and for Mara's sake that he had not. But she had no desire to see either of them, or ponder the questions they had raised. For now, she and Radu were stuck waiting. Mehmed had laughed, delighted at Lara's statements in her letter to Hunyadi. Radu had laughed as well, while giving his sister terrified looks behind Mahmed's back.
He understood the truth behind each and every one of her words. But until they found out if Hunyadi would take the bait, if a war would threaten the empire and lure Murad back from his early retirement, Mehmed was sultan. In the 2 weeks since they had come to Adana with its new sultan, Lada had not seen him once. He had been snatched away by the courts, pulled under in a too familiar poison current of enemies and allies. More of the former than the latter. No one was happy with the young new leader. Lada had been certain he would wilt under the pressure, but in spite of his machinations to lure his father back, Mehmed had risen to the occasion. He bent to no man and met every challenge in the open, eager to learn. But all doors to him were closed now. Lada missed him sometimes, and she hated him for that. She had been right to push him away. Trusting him would only hurt her in the end. She swung her fist at Nikolai's head. He raised an arm to block the blow, and she delivered a killing stab with her wooden dagger. Nikolai laughed, staggering dramatically to the ground.
Dead again at the hands of the ugliest girl in creation.
He stuck out his tongue, face contorted in a grimace. Lada kicked him in the stomach.
I am no girl. Who is next?
The other Yanacheris gathered in a loose circle around Lada and Nikolai, shuffled their feet and avoided eye contact. Nikolai pushed himself up on an elbow.
Really? Cowards. I still have bruises from the last time. I cannot sit without pain. She fights dirty.
Ivan did not even respond, having never forgiven Lada for besting him when they were introduced. He refused to fight her and rarely acknowledged her presence. Lada laughed, showing all her sharp teeth.
Because when you are on the battlefield, honor will mean so much. You will die with a blade between your ribs, secure in the knowledge that you fought with manners.
She picked up her dull practice sword, abandoned on the edge of the circle, and swung it through the air, sweeping it across the line of the Yanacheris' collective throats.
I would rather die in this ring at your hand than on the field in the name of the little zealot, Nikolai said.
The other Yanacheris grumbled in assent. They had become more and more vocal in their complaints about Mehmed, about their work, about their pay. Lada did not fail to notice that their grievances were aired without regard for who could hear, indicating little fear of reprisal or reprimand.
What is going on here?
A short man with piercing dark eyes, one ear a mangled, scarred stub, strode into the practice ring. The Yanacheris snapped to attention.
We were practicing, sir.
Nikolai stared straight ahead, as though if he did not look at Lada, the commander would not notice her. She met the man's gaze without batting an eye.
I train with these Yanacheris.
Since when?
For months now. I traveled with them from Amasya.
We are not so lax in Adana as they are in the outer regions. You will remove yourself.
He turned, effectively dismissing her.
No.
He cocked his head.
No?
No. I am doing no harm, and your men can certainly use the challenge.
The man turned toward Nikolai.
Show this girl that she has no place on a field with Yanacheris.
Nikolai grimaced, rubbing the back of his neck.
Do I have to, Ilias? Did it sound like a request?
But I just fought with her. Make someone else go.
Disbelief coloring his face, Ilias gestured at one of the other Yanacheris. He was a Valahian, so Lada automatically liked him. With a beleaguered sigh, Matei stepped forward, picking up a practice sword. Lada had not fought him yet. The Adana Yanacheris always hung back, confused and wary, while the Amasya Yanacheris were used to her. Matei had decent form, his precise movements backed by a compact, powerful body. Lada had him disarmed and on the ground in 6 moves. The next Yanacheri took 4. The third Yanacheri was more difficult, and it was a full minute before he, too, was beaten.
Enough!
Ilias took up a sword and strode into the center of the practice ring. Lada attacked first,
She always attacked first. He anticipated it, blocking her strike with bone-jarring force. He seemed to know what she would do before she did it, reading her as easily as Radu read people's emotions. After several of her failed attacks, Elias caught the edge of Lada's sword, ripping it from her hands. Instead of backing away, she screamed and spun herself into him, past his sword, a dagger pulled from her wrist sheath at his neck. He slammed his head into hers, knocking her to the ground. The bright blue sky spun above her. Elias leaned into her view, holding out a hand. She took it, and he pulled her up. She refused to sway on principle, though her head complained bitterly. Elias regarded her. "Carry on." He walked away. "I lost," Lada said, hand against her head. "No," Nikolai answered, draping an arm across her shoulders. "I am pretty sure that means you won."
"Lada!"
She turned, scowling to find Radu running toward her. He was gasping and breathless. She crouched into a fighting stance, looking behind him for the threat, ready to kill whatever was chasing him. Instead, he grabbed her by the shoulders. His eyes shone with panic or excitement, or both.
"Hunyadi! The Pope! They have declared a crusade! They are already marching!"
Lada blinked. Even as she wrote to Hunyadi, she doubted anyone would listen to her. They must have already been poised on the brink of attack, waiting for an opening. And now, they were taking it. She threw her head back and laughed, a barking, strangled sound like that made by the stray hounds that slunk through the streets of Turgu Viste.
"Hunyadi! A crusade!"
Matei shouted a command, and the Yenicheris left, instantly falling into formation as they headed to the barracks for more information. Radu had not let go of Lada's shoulders, his grip crushing. Lada looked at his face, the tightness and fear there. "What? This is what we wanted, what Mahmed wanted. It will force Murad to take the throne again." Radu shook his head. "No, there is more. Father, he sent troops. Machia leads a contingent of Valahians." For one brief, glorious moment, Lada's heart swelled with pride for her father. He had finally found his spine, had come down in defense of his own people against the country that held their very lives as collateral. "He has sacrificed us," Radu whispered. Lada squeezed the pommel of her practice sword until her fingers cramped. Mara's talk of duty to one's country was meaningless if one's country cared nothing for its duty to you. "He sacrificed us years ago, but I will be damned if I let him kill us." She dropped her sword and grabbed Radu's wrist, pulling him along behind her as she rushed to the main wings of the palace. Her head ached, a bump already growing where Ilias had struck her. But she did not have time to indulge the pain.
"Mahmed will not let them kill us. He is the Sultan now."
Radu sounded as though he was trying to convince himself. Lada hissed, nearly laughing at the irony.
"We engineered this whole situation to get his father to be Sultan again. Mahmed may not have a say for long. We are running. Right now. We can slip out during the confusion of troop movements. With what supplies? With what money? Even if we make it out of the city, we have no way of getting back to Valahia."
Lada skidded to a stop in front of the door to their small apartments within the palace. Mahmed paced there, hands behind his back, forehead creased in worry. With him was a contingent of guards, and Halil Pasha, the main advisor he had inherited from his father, the man responsible for Lada's stay as captive. If Halil Pasha was here, Mahmed must have lost the argument to protect Lada and Radu. Her fingers twitched toward her wrist sheaths, where she had not removed the daggers. Mahmed looked up, his expression unchanging. Lada lifted her chin in defiance. If she and Radu were to be punished for their father's actions, she would not let it happen without a fight.
The first man to touch Radu would die.
There you are, Mehmed hurried forward, waving for Lada and Radu to join him. You are excused, Halil Pasha.
Then the guards were not here for Lada and Radu. Lada did not relax her posture. The older man narrowed his eyes.
We still have much to discuss.
I said you are excused.
Lada noted with interest the look of derision that crossed Halil Pasha's face and the petulant tone to Mahmed's voice. It was not the tone of someone in power. She met Halil Pasha's shrewd eyes. As he walked away, she could practically see the threads trailing from him, snagging on everything he passed. Mahmed was sultan, but he was not in power. They were escorted to Mahmed's new chambers, which were even more opulent and dizzying than his previous ones. He instructed his guards to remain outside, then slammed the doors shut and threw himself onto a pillow.
He will not come.
What?
Lada walked the borders of the room, tracing the gold patterns painted onto the walls.
My father. He has refused to come lead the armies. He says that I am sultan now, and it is my job. I will do it if I must. The best I can. But I am not ready to face Hunyadi.
Radu spoke up, voice high and fast with the relief that they were still safe, for now.
Lada could tell you about Hunyadi's tactics. She studied him.
Lada's eyes cut at Radu like a knife.
Yes, and I can tell you that he and his forces have the blessing of God and the fervor of a renewed crusade. That he uses wagons as mobile barricades. That he is organized and swift and brutal. That they have been waiting for this opportunity to unify them for years, and they will descend on your holdings like a swarm of locusts. And I can tell you that your Yanacheris, the soldiers you need to obey you without question, call you names behind your back and complain of poor wages and treatment. I can only imagine you are equally popular with the Spahis.
Spahis had even more to lose under an unsuccessful sultan. They had land and wealth, prestige and influence. All the Yanacheris had were their lives and their salaries.
Mehmed threw his hands up in despair. I know I am not ready to face Hunyadi. That was never the plan. I need my father.
His voice broke at the end of the sentence, and Lada realized with a pang that he had been thrown to the wolves, just as she and Radu had. His father had abandoned him, sacrificed him as assuredly as their own had. If this war did not devour him, men like Halil Pasha would. Lada sighed, sitting down near Mehmed and leaning back to look at the grandeur of the ceiling's carved geometrics.
Your father says you are the sultan.
Mehmed clicked his tongue in annoyance.
Yes, that is the problem.
That is the solution. If you are the sultan, he must obey your commands to come and lead your armies. And if you are not the sultan, he must come back and lead his armies.
A slow smile spread across Mehmed's face.
Lada, I think I love you.
She slammed her fist into his shoulder, and he slouched away, looking at her in outrage.
How dare you strike me?
I dare perfectly well. Now go write your missive. The crusade is not waiting, and neither should you.
While Mehmed went to gather his writing tools, Radu stood in the middle of the room, wringing his hands.
What about our father? What should we say?
We say nothing. We do nothing. You do not poke a sleeping bear to ask what it will do when you wake it up.
I think I have an idea, though. To keep us safe.
Lada let out a dismissive puff of air between her lips.
I keep us safe. Remember what I told you in the stables when Merchia was torturing you?
A smile finally broke through Radu's concern. It lit his face with a beauty to rival the ceiling.
you would not let anyone else kill me.
That honor is mine, and mine alone.
Radu finally relaxed, sitting back on a pillow and flinging his arms wide. He was still such a child in so many ways, and Lada wanted to keep him that way, or force him to leave it behind forever. She never could decide which, and it nagged at her. Only when Radu was no longer looking did Lada let her smile fade into a calculating frown. She had to keep them safe from Murad's wrath. She had to turn Mehmed's rule to their advantage. But she did not know how. 20.
Where are you going? Radu asked, though he knew the answer.
Lada finished tugging on her boots. She wore trousers beneath her skirts, the skirts ill-fitting, and put on almost as an afterthought.
To train. Even with all the Yanacheris gone to fight?
There are a few left. Radu scowled.
You are such good friends with the Yanacheris. I never see you.
He tried to keep the pleading out of his voice, but he was lonely. Mehmed was always busy, and Radu dreaded ever becoming the nuisance he had been viewed as by Lada and Bogdan growing up. When Mehmed wanted him, he was there without question or delay. But if Mehmed did not call for him, Radu drifted, listless. Lada did not respond, and Radu could not resist digging at her.
Do you remember when we came here?
Of course I remember. It has only been a few weeks.
Are you stupid?
No, I mean the first time we came here. With father. She got quiet then. They never spoke of their father, not to each other, nor to anyone else. Tension pulled around Lada's eyes that Radu felt too, as though merely by invoking their father's memory, someone would realize that his contract with the Ottomans was broken, and Lada's and Radu's lives were the price.
You were angry with me the whole time.
I am always angry with you, Radu.
Say what you mean.
You were angry with me because I befriended the enemy. Riding with the Yanacheris, talking with them.
I simply find it amusing that now they are your dearest companions.
A flurry of emotion descended on Lada's face. Guilt, Radu suspected, though the rage that followed was more familiar. She finally settled on derision.
I do not have to answer to you. Go crawl on your belly in front of their god. At least I have a sword in my hands.
The door slammed behind her, punctuating her exit. Radu sighed and rubbed his face, wondering what he had hoped to accomplish by needling his sister. Did he want her to stop training with the Yanacheris? Or did he want her to admit that she had accepted this as their home? Because if she admitted it, then he finally could too. The unfairness pricked at him, that she could hate them and enjoy them at the same time. If anyone deserved to be friends with the Yanacheris, it was him. He had never found Lazar again and wondered about his fate, wishing he were here to joke with and to help Radu find a place he belonged, as he had so long ago in the stables. His soul sputtering like a candle at the end of its wick, Radu went in search of Mola Gurana. The tutor was in his chambers studying. He weighed Radu with his eyes and stood.
Let us walk.
Lada loved to make comments about how dull Mola Gurana was, claiming he was the bastard son of a shepherd who had become too amorous with the sheep. He used to repeat his lessons at night in a bleating monotone until Radu begged her to stop, worried her version would replace the real lessons in his mind. Radu found Mola Gurana deeply comforting, his ascetic demeanor restful and safe. When they were standing in front of a fountain, Radu blurted out what he could not admit to Lada. He had come so close, had even thought that if he presented it as a secret plan to save their lives, she might agree. But he was alone in this, as always. I want to convert. Mola Gurana simply blinked and nodded, as though Radu had commented on the weather.
No one can know. I mean, would that be acceptable? If it was just between God and me.
A true conversion is always only between a man and God.
Radu wiped his brow, relieved. If Lada found out that he had made it official, he worried it would break what remained of their bond.
Whatever else she was, Lada was his family, his childhood, his past. They had to stay together.
A man walked past them, his robes formal but unfamiliar. He was slender, with a pronounced belly, like his middle was a bulb anchoring slender branches. His face was devoid of hair, not clean-shaven, but hairless. Mola Gurana inclined his head, and the two men exchanged a greeting. The hairless man looked toward Radu as though expecting an introduction.
Radu is one of my students. Radu, this is the chief eunuch, Mola Gurana said.
Radu knew it was a title of some sort, but he did not know what level of respect he was supposed to show.
Embarrassed, he asked, "What is a eunuch?"
For the first time he could recall, Mola Gurana looked ill at ease. The chief eunuch smiled, though, and gestured for Radu to join him.
"Walk with me, and I will tell you."
Radu stood neck-deep in the water, then bent his knees to leave only his nose and eyes above the surface. The steam rising all around him obscured the patterns of blue and white tile, everything a dizzying blur of heat and color. In Valahia, they had only bathed during the summer when they stayed on the banks of the Arjesh. The rest of the time, they washed with cloths and basins. Baths were a luxury of the Ottomans he savored. Lada enjoyed no such comforts. Though the palace bath had certain hours set aside for women, Lada refused to use them. There was a permanent private bath for women, but it was in the harem complex. Lada, of course, could not and would not set foot there. Radu had heard tales of women who entered the harem as a method of divorcing their husbands. The chief eunuch had more stories than anyone in the whole city, and Radu loved hearing them. But no matter. Lada could spend her free time with the soldiers and their crude jokes and their worst smell. Radu spent his studying the scriptures and the teachings of the prophet. The feeling he found in holy words was one he could only compare to the long afternoons he had spent with his nurse, sitting by the fire, safe and separate from the rest of the world. He could not quite describe it, and hid it as well as he could from Lada. But when he listened to the call to prayer, it felt like home inside his heart. He wanted to ponder this more, and to practice the words of conversion he said so many times in his heart, but never aloud. So he was glad for the solitude of the baths today. He always went at odd times to avoid a crowd. He had begun sprouting hair in new places. His legs aching every night with the stretching pull of time finally claiming his childhood. Besides, there was the curious effect the warm water had on his developing manhood, which he quite enjoyed and preferred to experience alone. Poor eunuchs. Though the chief eunuch said being castrated and sold was the only future his parents had been able to offer him, Radu did not think it was very kind. The chief eunuch was powerful, yes, in charge of the entire harem and privy to the inner workings of the empire. But what a sacrifice! Radu closed his eyes, let his arms float, felt all the tension swirl away from him. Then someone grabbed his ankles and dragged him under the water. He kicked out, terrified and frantic, remembering the times Machia would hold his head beneath the fountain until his vision went dark and his lungs nearly burst from want of air. A horrible thought clawed through Radu's panic. Had Machia been killed in battle and sent his spirit to drag Radu down with him? As his scream bubbled out around him, Radu's foot connected with a shoulder and he twisted free. He surfaced, spluttering. Mahmed popped up next to him, water streaming down his face, white teeth shining. No ghost. Mahmed teasing, not Machia tormenting. Mahmed's laughter echoed around them, filling the room until they were completely cocooned by it. Radu felt as though he were breathing in Mahmed's laughter, warm and heavy as it filled his lungs and settled on his skin.
You scared me. His tongue was thick and clumsy in his mouth. He had not seen Mahmed for days, had not seen him alone for weeks.
Yes, that was apparent. Mahmed's lips twisted into a playful grin. You look like you're about to fall asleep. I was worried you would drown.
Well, thank you for preventing my drowning by pulling me under the water in an attempt to drown me.
Mahmed bowed with a dramatic flourish.
He was giddy, cheeks flushed brighter than the heat could account for. The war had not been going well, even with Mahmed's father reluctantly taking the lead.
Do you have good news?
Radu's chest twisted tight with bands of hope. It was a strange sensation, and one he did not know what to do with. Did he hope Mahmed's forces were winning? Was that traitorous, knowing that his own brother led troops in the conflict? Did the Ottomans' winning make it more or less likely that Radu and Lada would be killed for their father's betrayal? And then, seeing the relief shining in Mahmed's black eyes, Radu knew what he hoped for. He hoped for the best for his friend, regardless of what that meant for himself. Mahmed threw his arms in the air, splashing them both. The gesture was childlike in its joyful abandon. Ever since they had returned to Adirna, with its politics and demands and war, Mahmed had held himself as unyielding and straight as a stake. Radu laughed to see him relax back into himself.
My father has triumphed at Varna. The crusade is defeated. Hunyadi fled like a dog, and the Hungarian king's head travels here now on the end of my father's spear.
Radu smiled as best he could, but his mind worried away at what this meant and how it would affect him. Mahmed's expression turned thoughtful.
Your father was not there.
Feigning a casual, joking tone that could not be further from how he actually felt, Radu put a hand to his chest.
My father, the coward, miss a battle where he has tepidly supported both sides. I am shocked. I have no word on Machia's fate. His fate is nothing to me.
Radu's pretense of disinterest was betrayed by the bitterness that curdled his words.
Mahmed put a hand on his shoulder, the weight of it there both a comfort and a strange thrill. It made Radu feel real, in a way he often struggled to.
It will work itself out, Mahmed said. There will be a new treaty, and my father wishes me to remain on the throne. I think I am ready. I know that was not our plan, but the last few weeks have changed my mind. I want this. I think I can be the Sultan.
His voice raised at the end, a hint of a question lingering there.
I think, Radu said, putting his own hand on Mahmed's shoulder, you will be the greatest Sultan your people have ever seen.
Lada does not believe in me, Mahmed's mouth twisted wryly. She believes in no one but herself.
Radu shook his head, so aware of the space between them, the water connecting their bodies. He felt secure and happy and closer to Mahmed in this moment than he had ever felt to anyone.
I believe in you. Enough for both of us.
Radu knew Mahmed could do this, and he would be at Mahmed's side, helping him.
Lada would too, even if she pretended at hating life in Adirna.
The world and their future opened up before him like the soaring ceiling of the mosque.
Upward.
Mahmed nodded solemnly. And you do not have to worry about your father. As long as I am on the throne, you are under my protection. I will make sure no one hurts you.
Radu closed his eyes in relief. Finally, someone cared enough to keep him safe. Someone who actually had the power to do so.
It was a very different reassurance than Lada's promise that no one would kill him but her. Blinking away the emotion that had pooled in the corners of his eyes, Radu nodded. But perhaps you could make certain that no one lets my father know we are safe. Mahmed's eyebrows lifted quizzically. He does not deserve to be reassured. Let him think he has killed us. Let him be poisoned with whatever guilt he has the capacity to feel.
That is fitting. Though I am glad for your father's weakness. Without it, I would have been denied your friendship. And Lada's.
Radu beamed. I am glad too. He had only a split second to register the shift in Mahmed's expression from sincere to mischievous, before Mahmed's ankle hooked around Radu's own and Mahmed pushed his head beneath the surface.
Radu rose, coughing, as Mahmed cut through the water away from him, laughter trailing in his wake. As he gave chase, the steam, so thick it looked like a living creature, parted briefly to reveal a man sitting unnoticed in the corner of the baths, watching them. The steam once again hit the man just as Radu was able to place his face.
Halil Pasha. Mahmed's laughter rang through the room, disembodied as it bounced from wall to ceiling and back again, sounding like a warning bell.
21.
And Hunyadi fled, Lada said, riding beside Nikolai.
Like a rabbit before a hawk.
She nodded thoughtfully.
With the Hungarian king dead, everything is in turmoil. Hunyadi might even have an avenue to the throne.
You think he wants to rule Hungary?
Lada snorted.
No, he wants to defend Europe out of pure love for the cause of Christ.
Of course he wants to rule.
She leaned back in her saddle, closing her eyes against the sun. It was a relief to have the Yanacheris back. While they had been out fighting, she had worried she would lose her mind with idleness. She had never known what outcome to hope for, either. A win for the Ottomans? A triumph for Hunyadi? And hated Machia? It did not matter now, as everything was decided. And due to several key deaths, Ilias had been promoted to lead a larger group, including the Yanacheri troops who had accompanied Mahmed from Amasya. Altogether, there were several thousand Yanacheri troops spread throughout the empire, with only a couple hundred regularly stationed in Amasya with Mahmed. It was a nice promotion for Ilias, but she knew he was destined for bigger things.
I wish I had been there, Lada said.
Nikolai laughed darkly.
I wish I had not.
But if you had been there, little dragon, whose side would you have fought for?
My own.
And which side is that? Their father had killed Lada and Radu twice over, first by leaving them here, and next by breaking the treaty that protected their lives. She would not fight for him, and certainly not for Machia, contemptible worm. Hunyadi, she would kill on sight.
No.
She rolled her head around on her shoulders, stiff neck straining against jacket collar. It was not Hunyadi's fault her father left Valahia weak enough, but Hunyadi had found a foothold there and forced her father to turn to the Sultan.
Mahmed, then?
He was her ally in a world straining at its bit, bristling for her death. A laugh, a flash of his dark eyes, a tug on her hair. He was her friend. He was also ruler of the country, holding her captive. She finally fixed her hooded black eyes on Nikolai.
My own, sigh.
She tethered her horse with the Yanacheris. Ilias's men and a few other groups drilled their horses practicing formations. Lada was never invited to participate in those, as her participation served no purpose. Weapons, training, and sparring were individual skills. But hundreds of men moving and reacting as one was something she had no part in. She settled against the roots of a tree at the edge of the open space, in the shade and facing away from the troops.
Seems fair enough, said a man walking close by.
I like him more than the last commander we had. He was a Bulgar. I cannot stand Bulgars.
I am a Bulger, you cur, and I cannot stand you either.
They laughed. Then the first spoke again. Are they really leaving the brat on the throne? Larda tried to see who was speaking, but the tree blocked her view. Her first impulse was to stand and defend Mehmed. But what would she say? That Mehmed was her friend? She doubted they would accept that as evidence of his leadership qualities.
As far as I hear, yes. Murad has returned to his retirement.
Barely on the throne, and we have already fought one crusade. How many more are we to fight to defend him?
They do not pay us enough to shoulder the burden of the brat.
They simply do not pay us enough. Last week, Ismail openly spoke of protesting in front of the Sultan's own bodyguards.
What did they say?
They say nothing. They also do not prevent anyone from saying it. If we could get a few higher-ranking officials on our side, we would be able... They drifted away.
Anada lost the last of their gossip. Their complaints were not unfamiliar, though they sounded more widespread and accepted than she had thought they were. The Yanacheris were a privileged class, educated and paid, but they were still slaves. She wondered how much actual force was behind their words and how much was empty complaints.
Nikolai rejoined her some time later. They rode out behind the corps, done for the day. He let his horse slow, putting more distance between them and the rest. When he spoke, he lacked his usual jesting tone.
I have been here since I was 7 years old. I have trained alongside brothers from every nation under the shadow of the Ottomans. We fight, we bleed, we die for a country that is not ours, commanded in a tongue our mothers never spoke to us, instructed in a religion that allows us to be enslaved because we were not born to it.
He paused, their horses' hooves meeting out a discordant rhythm. And yet my life is better than it would have been at home. I'm educated and better trained than anyone we fight. I have enough to eat and clothes on my back, opportunities to advance. Until I am broken against the walls of a city that should be my ally, or die on the end of a sword held by a cousin I never knew. We are the most valuable force of this empire, and we exist here because we are not actually part of the empire. Most days I think I owe my life to the Ottomans. On the field at Varna, I realize I do not want to give my life for them. But in my heart, I am a soldier, and I wish to do nothing else.
He shook his head, a heavy sigh punctuated by his hands lifted into the air, palms up.
I would like to be as certain as you are, Larda, who my side is.
She looked at his palms, open, waiting to receive.
In your heart, where you know you are a soldier, tell me. What language beats there?
Nikolai's eyes fell, his face going soft and far away.
Valachian.
She reached out and put her hand on his, resting it there, palm to palm.
We are on the same side.
He wrapped his fingers around hers, then opened his eyes and smiled wryly.
We had best not tell anyone else then, seeing as how we are deep in enemy territory.
Larda pulled back her hand and took the reins.
For now.
She kicked her horse to a gallop, past the soldiers, hair whipping around her face as she raced toward home.
Toward Adina, she corrected herself, silently cursing her traitor mind.
Maybe she was not so certain whose side she was on after all. In spite of Ilias's allowances, the leaders in Adina were stricter than they had been in Amasya, and too often Larda had been prevented from training with Nikolai's men. She stomped into her chambers, startled to find Radu deep in conversation with Mola Gurana, whom she had not seen these last 3 months since leaving Amasya. Her brother looked up, guilt painting itself across his face like the sun disappearing behind a cloud.
Larda! I thought you would be with the Yanacheris.
Are we being forced to endure his lessons again? She scowled.
In their time here with the war and Mahmed's constant duties as Sultan, she and Radu had not yet received regular tutelage. While she wanted to resume the history, logic, and strategy lessons, she had not missed Mola Gurana's insufferable dronings on Islam. Mola Gurana's eyebrows lifted slowly, heavy with the weight of his disdain.
I am here at your brother's request. You are welcome to be elsewhere.
What is he talking about? Lada snapped, lapsing into Valachian for privacy. Radu shrugged, head tilted to one side as though he were trapping something between his ear and shoulder.
Know your enemy?
Caught off guard, Lada barked out a sharp laugh.
You will have to know this enemy enough for both of us.
She bowed mockingly toward the teacher and went into her own small room. While this freed her from Mola Gurana's fetid water voice, it left her with nothing to do and no refuge. She flopped under her bed and boredom made her eyes heavy with sleep. She dreamed of Amasya swimming in the pool with Radu and Mehmed, stars swirling and burning around them. When she awoke, it was with Mehmed's name heavy on her tongue, his absence in her life a palpable pain. She hurried out of their rooms before Radu could ask where she was going, before she had to admit to him, and herself, how much she longed for a few private moments with Mehmed as her friend, not as the Sultan. In the halls of the palace, she felt invisible. There were so few women here. In Turgo Viste, women had been far more present, less separated from the regular courts. She wondered sometimes what her life would have been like had her mother not fled. Would she have had an ally? A friend? Would her mother have stopped her father from leading them here? Probably not. Her mother had not been strong enough to stay with them, much less keep them safe. Perhaps, though, she would feel stronger walking down these halls with another woman at her side. Halima laughing, or Mara glowering. Maybe they did have something to teach her after all. Men here either looked right past her as though she did not exist, or looked so hard that she knew they were not seeing her at all. It made her long for a weapon in her hand, for a crown instead of snarled braids, for a beard even, for anything that would make them see her for what and who she was. Or perhaps, looking at her and seeing nothing, they understood perfectly well who she was already. She was not certain the guards would allow her to see Mehmed. She had never come without an invitation. If she was turned away, she did not know what she would do. But after only a few heartbeats of waiting, the guards let her through. Mehmed looked up from his desk, eyes lighting as he stood. Lada felt the tension and terror of anonymity drain from her body. She mattered to Mehmed.
To what do I owe the honor?
He asked, sweeping his arm back in an exaggerated bow.
Do not make me knock your turban off.
She pushed past him and sat in his seat, examining the papers so he would not notice how grateful, how glad to be in his presence she was. He did not need anyone else nourishing his ego. Radu did that enough for the entire Draculesht line. Lada lifted several pages, all notes and ledgers and maps, detailed lists of troops and supplies, Yanacheri forces, horses, wagons, weapons, ledgers of various accounts, maps of Constantinople. She tapped a finger on one. You have been busy. He leaned over her, tracing the edge of the map reverentially.
I am the Sultan, Lada.
I have noticed. He grinned, the expression wiping away the regal years he tried to force onto his face by distant scowls. My father has returned to his retirement. I did not think I was ready, but the throne is mine regardless, and I will be worthy of it. Lada shrugged, shifting away from the intensity of Mehmed's pose, his body radiating energy so near hers. It was only because she had not been around him much these last 3 months that his presence affected her so. Or maybe it was because she could not help noticing he was growing taller, more handsome, more... No. She needed to focus on something else, anything else.
Constantinople. This soon?
He walked away from her, began pacing. We have a 5-year peace treaty with Hungary and Hunyadi. My borders are as peaceful as they ever were. This is why I'm here. This is why I was born. Your father started out his rule trying the same thing, and it brought him nothing but trouble. A line formed between Mahmed's fine brows.
He had too many fronts. His brothers trying to claim what was his, trying to steal land. He had to attend to problems at home.
And your advisers support you?
His scowl deepened. Not all of them, no. But I am Sultan. They must follow me.
A Sultan who summoned his father to fight his first battle.
Mahmed's face erupted into a storm.
That was your idea! If you...
Lada heard the noise before she registered that anything was wrong. An instinct honed by all those days in the forest with Bogdan hunting her. A body trained with focus provided by desperation and loneliness. A sudden sense of wrongness she could have ignored. She threw herself forward and tackled Mahmed as a dagger flew past where his chest had been. It cut her shoulder before clanging sharply against the wall and falling to the ground. Lada and Mahmed hit the floor hard, with Mahmed letting out a breathless groan. Lada rolled forward, picking the dagger up, then turned and threw it as soon as she spied a moving target. The man dodged a fatal blow, the dagger glancing off his side. His face was wrapped in black cloth, features hidden. His clothes were plain. Their assailant pulled out another dagger, crouching defensively and stalking to the side, trying to find a better angle on Mahmed. Lada kicked her friend toward the desk.
Get behind it! She shouted.
The man passed his dagger from hand to hand, movements lazy and unhurried, as Mahmed scrambled behind the desk and shouted for his guards. The assassin did not seem concerned. His eyes crinkled in a smile as he looked at Lada. He pointed the dagger at her, then looked toward Mahmed. Lada launched herself forward, barreling into him with all the momentum she could build. He was strong, lean, and lithe, but she was solid and lower to the ground. She hit him squarely in his middle, the air leaving his lungs in a rush as she took him to the ground. His grip on the dagger loosened, and it skittered away out of both of their reach. The assassin was stunned, but he would recover fast. Lada punched him in the face again and again, but her angle was off, and she could not use as much strength as she hoped to. He grabbed her wrists, pulling her to the side. Her face was forced close to his hands too strong to break free from. She slammed her forehead into his nose, then bit into his cheek where his head wrap had come loose. He cried out and released her wrists. Rolling away, she found the dagger and spun around as he stumbled to his feet. He dodged her first lunge, moved with her in a dance she had practiced many times in the ring with Nikolai, a dance they both knew the same moves to. Even bloodied and dazed, he was more than a match for her. And still, no help had come. Her training was failing her, the jabs and the lunges anticipated, killing blows knocked aside. One of these times he would catch her wrist and get the dagger, and then he would kill her and Mahmed. Despair welled up in her. A look of triumph shaped the assassin's eyes into omens of death. He knew everything she would do. He only had to outlast her. She was a girl and a child. He was stronger and faster and, with a scream of rage, Lada abandoned her learned moves, her careful training. She flew at him like a wild boar, all fury and animal instinct. He did not know where to block because her blows made no sense. Her movements had no grace. She slashed at his face, and when he grabbed her wrists, she bit his hand, clenching her jaw, teeth clamping onto bone. She kept her teeth in him as he shook her, slamming the dagger into his side again and again, following him as he fell away from her, trying to break free. She stayed on top. Stabbing, not caring where she hit, not going for a careful, efficient blow. An animal scream, muffled by his hand, continued from her throat.
Lada!
Shaking and panting, she blinked her eyes clear of the haze that had descended. Her jaw would not unlock, the muscles so tight she wondered if she would have this man's hand in her mouth forever. Finally, with pain shooting through her whole face. She managed to part her teeth enough for his hand to fall free. It was then that she tasted the blood that filled her mouth. Then that she realized she was on the floor, on top of the man, on top of the body. She staggered to her feet, then fell back down, crawling away from the ruined body. Mahmed placed a hand on her face and turned it toward his own. "Are you hurt?" She shook her head, then nodded, then shook it again. She did not know if she was hurt. Everything was trembling, everything was numb. She looked down at her hands, covered in blood, and could not feel them. "Lada? Lada? Lada!" She snapped her eyes back to Mehmed. He was the only thing in the room that she could focus on, the only thing that made sense. "My guards never came." She knew that was important. Knew she had known it was important before. This. Before the blood. So much blood. "Do you think they are dead?" Mahmed took a step toward the door. He should not go out there. She knew he should not. Tried to figure out why. Everything snapped back into place. "Stop! We need to leave. Another way. The guards are either dead, or they were collaborators." Mahmed shook his head. "They are Yanacheris. They would never..." "He was a Yanacheri." "What?" Her teeth trembling, Lada peeled back the man's mask. She did not recognize him, and found herself deeply grateful for that. But she still knew what he was, if not who. "The way he fought. I have sparred with dozens of versions of him. He trained as a Yanacheri. We need to get out of here now. And we need to hide until we know who to trust." Mahmed was shaking as much as she was. "Who can I trust?" he whispered. Lada held out her hand. He took it. 22. Under other circumstances, the look of utter bewilderment on Lada's face would have delighted Radu. She was always so certain of herself that the image of her standing in the middle of the room, stiff, arms wrapped protectively around herself as her eyes darted everywhere, should have been one he treasured. But she was covered in blood, and Mehmed's jaw trembled when he was not talking, and both of them looked the way Radu always felt on the inside. He could not feel that way right now. They needed him. "We have to go somewhere else," Radu said. "It is well enough known that we are Mehmed's friends. If there are more assassins, and they search for him, they may look here." Lada shook her head, eyes pleading. "I could not think of anywhere else to go." If, as Mehmed and Lada suspected, a group of Yanacheris were behind the attempt, the palace was not safe. They had no way of knowing who had set it up, whether it was the soldiers themselves, or whether they were acting under orders from someone else. What if they ran to an advisor or a pasha for help, and ended up in the clutches of the very person who had ordered Mahmed's death? No, they needed somewhere secure, somewhere secret, somewhere no one else here could go, but that they could get to quickly, because they could not simply run. Mahmed was the Sultan, and if they ran now, he would lose everything. Where could a Sultan go to hide? Radu snapped his fingers. "The harem!" Lada's look of horror intensified. Mehmed frowned. "But they might look there too. Your mother is there, yes?" Mehmed nodded. "We do not speak much, though." Harem politics were as complicated as court politics, if not more so. Though the harem was a community unto itself, the women could exert incredible influence on the most powerful man in the empire, making them a political force to be reckoned with. The most powerful woman in the harem, and, therefore in the empire, was the mother of the Sultan. Radu had never met her, but the chief eunuch had remarked on her intelligence. "Your mother stands to lose the most if you are killed, so she will protect you," Radu said. "And the guards there are eunuchs, not Yanacheris. We will be safe, and you can begin investigating." Mehmed clasped his shoulder.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Radu.
No, Lada shook her head, eyes still wild.